better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Justin is in Hope. What's going on, Justin?
How you doing this morning, sir?
Hey, we're doing good, man. How about you?
Oh, man, I'm doing good. I was just calling to ask a question about Hudson Henry. You know, we've had a lot of inconsistency this year in the tight end, and we've also had some great plays out of the tight end, but we've had a lot of drop passes and key third downs. There were drop balls and stuff like that. Just checking to see what his status was. Are they just going to redshirt him this year?
Well, I do know this, Justin, just going off of people that I've talked to, is that he's going to be a phenom. I mean, they expect big things out of him. But this year, he is just not where he needs to be in the blocking aspect of being a tight end, which they desperately need to have in the tight end position to help out the offensive line. So from what I gather, they will more than likely redshirt him this year.
And Clay's talked about this on the show. He missed so much time in August that threw him behind.
Too. Yes.
Part of it was just missing time in camp.
Yeah, so that's the update we have for you, Justin.
Okay, thank you, guys. I was just checking on that. Thank you very much.
No problem, Justin. Appreciate you calling in. 877-377-6963 is number calling on the Cherokee Casino Hotline. Because, yeah, and that was the question that a lot of people had, obviously, with Cheyenne O'Grady being able to come back and make the plays that he has. He's been a difference maker. But the first few games, and even a little bit on Saturday, the other tight ends have struggled. I mean, you had Chase Harrell has had more drops than catches, I think, this year.
And he's a former wide receiver that bulked up to become a tight end.
Yeah, which...
So this isn't...
I don't think he bulked up his hands in any different way to change how he catches the ball. I don't know. But it's certainly been crucial. And then even Grayson Gunter on Saturday had the one hit him right in the hand. Like,
and
a
where was he
ball.
At?
In the end zone.
In the end zone, yeah.
I mean, and those are the plays you just can't have. So I get where Justin's coming from. And that's where a lot of people start wondering, okay, where's Hudson Henry? Why isn't he out there? Because, of course, they know how highly recruited he was, and I'm sure he'll be a great player for Arkansas, but they may redshirt him this year.
Right. Well, and that would be okay as long as C.J. O'Grady is healthy and
these
other guys are playing. Well, I think you're right. He is the next great tight end, and maybe he gives you three seasons. And, you know, what will he be, Hunter? I don't know. But all these Henrys have turned out to be pretty good.
Yeah. Well, and if you also look at it, too, and I don't want to put the cart before the horse because you still got 2019 to look at, but if you just look at as far as your overall offense next season and what it could be, I mean, you're going to have a lot of pieces and a lot of guys at skill positions that are going to be really good. I mean, you're still going to have Rakeem Boyd back there. You're still going to have Starkle. You're still going to have the wide receivers that are really good. All of your wide receivers essentially are returning. And then you'll have Hudson Henry in the tight end position. I mean, you're going to be really set as far as skill position goes. And if Hudson Henry can, like, listen, he comes from a family that's obviously very good at football, but he's just a guy that if you've talked to his coaches in high school and you've talked to the coaches here on the staff, he's a hard worker and he's going to put in the hours to make sure that he can see the field and be the best tight end he can be. So, yeah, I expect big things out of him, that is for sure. So we also had some people texting in and asking about the defensive side of the ball. And this one comes from the 870. It says, Arkansas had trouble setting the edge against Colorado State with the injuries that we've had a defensive end. Would it help to move Ageem back to defensive end? He's the most athletic defensive lineman we have.
Well, here, possibly helps this year. Here's the thing. Where's Ageem going to play on Sundays? It's got to be inside. That in every, you know, when we talk preseason and we've had Clay on and talked about this and everyone we've talked to, all the NFL people have said he's an inside guy. He's an interior defensive lineman. Or what the lingo is, he's an inside technique on Sundays. So is it, could he maybe help the team outside? And maybe is there some packages he rolls out there? Yes, but he needs to be inside because that's where his future's at.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
And to some degree, you're obligated, you owe it to him. I don't know how to exactly put the words with this, but... Are you doing him a disservice by not playing him in a position that's where they're going to be looking at him for Sundays? You want to put him in the best possible position, A, to help your team, but B, to advance his future.
Yeah. Well, and wasn't it...
And all signs point towards defensive tackle, not defensive end.
And wasn't it the whole thing about him saying that, hey, if you're going to come back for your senior year,
yep,
you're moving to the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't want to move, or if you refuse to move to the inside, then maybe you just need to move
that
on.
That was before Dorian Gerald got hurt.
So. Well, right, but still, right. But that's where they want him to be, obviously.
Is he your best defensive lineman? I think most people would say yes.
I would say yeah.
I don't think there's a lot of debate about that. I think he's flexible in the way that he can play multiple positions. He knows them. Could he maybe create a better pass rush on the end? Perhaps. I know you got Steve Caldwell as one of your two defensive line coaches, and dude knows him some D-line and knows him some SEC because he's been around a while. Wow. Him and Chavis is what, spent 15 years together at Tennessee. So this is what, 17 for them together, and he's probably spent, I don't know how many of you added it all up. He's been on staff a couple of times, you know, several seasons at Arkansas now. So
yeah. No, he's got as much experience as anybody probably in this league.
They'll get a game in the right spot. I think they've got him in the right spot. But if they need to move him around to help win a game, then I think they'll be willing to do that. But, you know, a game's got to be an inside guy for Sunday.
Do you think he was a little overhyped out of high school, or do you think he's just been in a bad situation?
I think, how much more would you think about him if he was on a very successful football team?
I'm sure a lot more.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. All these guys get... Their greatness gets diminished a little bit. Even a guy like a Froholt or Ragnow, getting my previous lineman confused, a Ragnow or someone that's went on to be drafted high. You know, how much more would they be heralded if they'd been on an 8 or 9 win team versus these below 500 teams?
Yeah. Well, that was always kind of my question, is just how we view players, because there's been some people also that when we've talked about a game, and a lot of people felt like he was. Some people were using him in the word bust, which I think is a little unfair to say that he's a bust or anything like that. But it does make you wonder as far as, you know, what could have been if he had some continuity since he's been at Arkansas, because obviously for the past 4 years of his career, I mean, coaching changes all over the place, even at his position.
Very little stability.
You're right. So I just couldn't imagine having to be a football player, especially one that's highly recruited coming out of high school. You go to your state school in Arkansas, and then your 4 years, essentially every year, you have something completely and totally different the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's at your position with your defensive line coach, whether it's your head coach, whether it's your style and philosophy. I mean, I just couldn't imagine what that would be like and how difficult that would be to overcome.
But even in the midst of the Brett Bielema era where, you know, wins weren't aplenty, they still produced several great, I mean, Filon and Trey Flowers are chief amongst them, defensive linemen that have had, you know, more than great NFL careers, particularly Trey Flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Where's he now? Seattle?
Is he Seattle?
Yeah.
Something like that. I think that's right. Okay, I'll trust you on that one. I thought it was Detroit for some reason. But anyways, they had a great track record of defensive linemen. In fact, if you look at just defensive linemen in general, of all the position groups over the past few years, it's definitely been one of your strong points, which has been good. Because in the SEC especially, if you're going to be successful defensively, it starts up front. And I know that you love to have 11 guys out there that can compete at the highest level. But as we've talked about and we've discussed, and this is not even just in the recent, you know, last decade. And since joining the SEC, Arkansas's best defenses, especially statistically, always, and I mean always, had multiple big-time players up front to start it all off. I mean, if you look back to 2006 when you had Jamal Anderson there at the defensive end position, Antoine Robinson.
He wasn't even brought in as a defensive end.
That's right. He was originally a wide receiver. Then you also had guys like Keith Jackson Jr. who was on there as a senior. You had Antoine Robinson. You had some really good players there. And then if you move on, of course, to 2015 defense, we mentioned Trey Flowers, and you had Darius Filon, and you also had Dietrich Wise, who was a young player. I mean, you had talent. Those were your best defenses, and that's why it's like when I saw the recruiting class that Chad Morris put together this past year, it was great that he got those wide receivers. It was great that he got Hudson Henry. But the thing that I thought was the best thing Arkansas could have done is the amount of high caliber defensive linemen. I believe they had 8 defensive linemen in this past recruiting class.
Yep.
And almost all of them were highly regarded and highly recruited. And that's building not only talent at that position, but depth. Because with the way college football is being played now, the way that the offenses go now, and how it's all about being quick and having to set the edge and having to have containment, you have to have more than just 4 great starting defensive linemen. You got to have a multitude of them that are quality.
But you want to, you know, you talk about whether you want a game inside or an outside defensive end, you want someone to set that edge so that you can fold that run back inside, funnel it back to the middle, and then you got a guy like a game in there to clean it up. Couple good inside tackles. Well, you know, maybe you could put a Jonathan Marshall in there or someone that's got the strength to hold that A-gap, but it's about shutting down A-gap on both sides of the center. And, you know, if you got someone like a game, they set the edge outside, but no one can control A-gap, then you've defeated the purpose, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
You just redirected where they're gashing you at.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it. I think some of these outs and some of these questions that are coming at us about this are obviously as a response to the couple of long runs and play two of the game?
Two or three, yeah.
You know, so where they went outside for 75 yards. So, I mean, I get it. Those to me, I could live with a true trick play or something, and a jet sweep end around, they pass it back, you know, some kind of throwback, something that's unconventional that they score on that way early. But that was a play designed to get you 6 yards, and it got you 76 yards.
Mm-hmm.
You
know? And sometimes it could be just a one bad step that can make all the difference in the world. So, yeah. But hey, listen, if they had Dorian Gerald healthy, I think that would also be another huge factor. But they just got to keep these guys healthy, and they got to keep them rotating in and out against some of these great offense they're going to be facing.
Yeah. Man, some bacon would be good right now, wouldn't it?
Yes, Tommy. Big bacon would be good at any point in time in life.
Bacon's always good. Bacon's like one of the true delights in life. And if you have not tried the bacon at Art's Barbecue, you are missing out. Hickory smoked, life-changing bacon. Why is it so good? Well, they brine the pork bellies themselves for 10 to 14 days, then put them on the smoker, and then they grill it up on their flat top. So when you get anything with bacon, and you can have everything there with bacon, I recommend the club sandwich because it's got their smoked turkey, smoked ham, and their house smoked bacon. That is on the back of the menu. You can find that. Any of their sandwiches, any of their burgers, you can add bacon to at Art's Barbecue. So be sure and stop in. Just get a side of bacon. You can get an appetizer plate with bacon on it. I know your doctor probably is not advising that, but trust me, this is good bacon here. It's worth the cholesterol. It's hickory smoked, life-changing bacon. You'll find it only at Art's House Smoked Bacon. Get it on anything and everything at Art's Barbecue on Rogers Avenue in Fort Smith.
If you want to get on the conversation, be sure to call or text into the Cherokee Casino Hotline, 877-377-6963. Been talking the defensive line and how that, you know, because here's the thing too, Tommy. I think it was the first game of the season you saw four senior starters on the defensive line and how impressive that was to see because you haven't really been used to having a lot of seniors, let alone in a particular position group. And now when you see the depth chart, which came out yesterday, right before the press conference that Chad Morris had, and you saw some of the guys that were listed, you see five freshmen now starting against San Jose State in general, but one of those guys being on the defensive line and Mateo Soli. So, you know, that's what's nice, and that's what you're hoping that you can continue to build, especially on the defensive line. And you like to have the offensive line get to this point too, where you just have, if somebody does get hurt or if somebody has mm-hmm. to step back or for whatever reason or whatever problem they're having, that you can rely on some talented guys to step up, next man up type mentality. And, you know, Mateo Soli, we mentioned in that second or third play that Colorado State scored a touchdown on, you know, that was Soli had just kind of a bad angle. Some people are saying he was being held.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure you got that screenshot and that question right, a lot, Tommy.
And, you know, not going to argue about whether he's held or not. A guy had a hold of this jersey. That doesn't. If Soli can't get the tackle for Colorado State was engaged with another Arkansas defender and reached around and had a hold of him. Now, Soli ought to be able to get away from that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just youth and getting more experience at this level.
That's so, right.
But just get in the way of the hole, then you got time for help to get there.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
It was just a lack of execution defensively.
Mm hmm.
You know, not everything can be blamed on a hold or a missed call. Sometimes you just don't execute.
That's right. And for those of you that are still frustrated by the defense, listen, if you give up 34 points, even John Chavis said in this press conference, that's unacceptable, and they don't want to get to that point. But with what you've become or what you've been this past few years and what you're becoming now, if you just look at the statistics, you are an improved defense as at this point in time. Now, it may not totally seem like it right now, but you are an improved defense.
Well, don't you feel like this next game, I mean, you gave up 400-plus yards, 420 yards or 25 yards this past week, 34 points. You need a game against San Jose State where you kind of show out a little bit defensively, just because the season average. Because you're going to have some of these games, whether it's Alabama, where you can't match up with their speed and their size, or LSU, where, you know, unless it's just a day that they're not clicking on all cylinders, there's a chance they go for 600 yards.
Oh, yeah.
And as many points as they want. So you need, I guess what I'm saying is, for season stat purposes, you need a game or two here with these last two non-conference games, the Western Kentucky game down in the schedule, where you kind of pad the stats a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Help the averages out.
That's what you're certainly wanting.
Yeah.
And to give
me, you want it to win, obviously.
Well,
but,
of course.
But you need some of these games because I fear that there may be a game or two on the horizon where the numbers could get out of control just based on the matchups.
Yeah, and against San Jose State specifically, for those of you who are curious about what Arkansas is going to be looking at as far as what they look like offensively, honestly, their offense is not that great. They're only scoring 25 points a game. They have 365 total yards in their first two games, 228 passing, 136 rushing, but they're giving up 413 yards per game. Now, they've only played two games. Their bye week has been this past weekend, so they've had an extra week of preparation for Arkansas, but they beat Northern Colorado 35-18. Don't think that they're in the Power Five. Mm-mm. And Tulsa, they lost 34-16. So, you know,
a team Arkansas beat a year ago.
Correct. So the point is that this team against San Jose State, they're not a great team. Offensively, they're not a juggernaut that just throws the ball all over and scores a lot of points on you. So this might be an opportunity for the defense to kind of get everything regrouped and back on the right track and get ready for Texas A&M.
So don't make them look like world beaters.
Yes, exactly. Don't go out there and make their quarterback, Josh Love, who is on the year 37 of 61 for 413 yards. Don't go out there and make him look like he's Tua or Trevor Lawrence. Because it seems like there's a lot of cases where quarterbacks are not that good, but when they play Arkansas, they have the game of their life. So, yeah, this would be a good opportunity for the defense to settle back in, get everything back in gear, and get ready for Texas A&M. And again, having Bumper Pool, who's listed as day to day, listed as a starter this weekend, keep him healthy because you're going to need him against A&M more than you are against San Jose.
Any concern or any thought given to how this team comes out and responds to a win? They've had to respond to losses so much under Chad Morris. Any concern at all that the win last week could, because they haven't had the taste, that they don't know how to deal with a lot of winning?
Well, I think
any concern with a young team, and I only bring it up because we know there's 52 freshmen, only 18 seniors, keep going through the list, that even a win against a team like Colorado State, and I know what you're saying out there, how can you be that any concern at all?
I think
slightly. Is
that
a valid question?
I think slightly, because you never know when a young team starts feeling themselves a little bit, because right now they're getting everybody tweeting at them how awesome they are.
Right. And I understand it's Colorado State, but you got a young team that doesn't know how to deal with success. Not that you had this great over-the-top successful moment. You didn't beat Alabama. You didn't beat Auburn or LSU. You beat Colorado State.
No.
But I'm interested to see if this team should have no moment of being flat. This team should have no moment of reflecting back on last week. You know, there is a little bit of a response, and I think there's some people, you know, they look at Club Dub and the post-game celebration. Can you put all that behind you now and move forward and build on that? That's an interesting thing I'm hoping to see this week, is you're not caught up in last week's victory against a non-Power 5 team.
Well, what I'm hoping is that they take what the victory was against Colorado State and use it as just sheer confidence building, mm-hmm. where it's like, we can do this now.
We are not collapsing in the fourth quarter.
We have had this feeling where we're constantly going to be collapsing if we ever get behind, that we make a mistake late in the game and ends up costing us everything. We overcame that now. We know how to do it. We know what it takes to do it. So now we're not afraid of it anymore. That's what I'm hoping.
Yep, I'm with you.
Is going to be the reaction and the response of this team.
Is that a unreasonable thought?
No, it's not unreasonable.
Out left field thinking about that?
No, Tommy, this team has not won two games in a row since 2017.
Right.
And honestly, under Chad Morris, they've never really had this feeling to where, because even in the games that they won against, I guess, Eastern Illinois that they played last year in the first game that they beat.
Right.
And then Tulsa later. I mean, neither of those games were a confidence-building type game because Eastern Illinois was an FCS opponent that was not good, and then Tulsa was in the middle of the season when he had Connor Nolan starting, and it was all up in the air, and people felt like the team was bad as it is. Like, neither of those wins said, all right, now let's go get after this next one.
I think the difference, though, is you change quarterbacks. Now everybody feels like we found our guy, and that's what you need is you really need Starkel to have another great performance leading an offensive performance that's in the 40-50 point range again,
yeah,
to build that confidence on. That's the difference. Last year you didn't really have a, you know, you were bouncing around with the quarterbacks a little bit, and you had Connor Nolan in the mix and different, you know, hopefully Starkel is again the rising tide that's lifting all the boats this week again.
Yes, that's what you're hoping for,
but they got to be focused on this, and I don't want to see any caught up in that. Only reason I worry about it is just it's a young team that hadn't had a lot of experience with winning.
Don't let the Colorado State game simply just be a flash in the pan. Don't let it be where that was just...
You don't play well this week. Even if you win by a field goal or a touchdown this week, it undoes a lot of the success of a week ago.
Yeah, because if you don't build on what you had this past week, then it's going to be tough for people to still believe that you could go into A&M or go down to Arlington to play A&M and say, hey, we got this. We can really compete in this game. It's not going to be the confidence level that you want. So go out there and take care of business against San Jose State. Score a lot of points. Shut them down defensively. You'll be in great shape, that's for sure.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Everybody's staying home. Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're at number 3. And nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs!
Chad Morris met with the media yesterday. Of course, was in a little better spirits for some reason. I can't imagine why. He was in a better mood yesterday and a little more energetic and a little more happier to have the press conference. But one of the things that he was asked about is his defensive performance, especially when it came to the fourth quarter, and how shutting out Colorado State in the fourth quarter was something that was new. But here's what he had to say.
We were very disappointed in giving up 2 plays for 150 yards and 2 touchdowns. But I was extremely proud of how guys responded in the second half, holding them to 26 yards rushing after giving up 10.3 yards rushing in the first half. And so they responded to the challenge. Like I said, the fourth quarter is a snapshot of what we want this defense to look like the entire game. When we had to make a stand, they were extremely productive in that fourth quarter.
Now, I know that they were going up against the backup quarterback for Colorado State. I know
that.
But
he wasn't bad.
But he actually, statistically, it looked like at least, he was even better than their starting quarterback. So, and I know that. And I know it's Colorado State. But the fact of the matter is that you had a defense that you haven't had in quite some time finish out the game in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought up the stats there, and you know it was a hot day, where you know that all those players were probably exhausted and tired, especially Colorado State, considering where the sun was at most of the game. But the point is what I'm trying to make is that even though you gave up 34 points, even though you had big plays here and there, the fact of the matter is that the defense finished the job in the fourth quarter is something that you can at least be excited about, that maybe you can continue to build on something like that.
Just don't put yourself... The question still is, and he talked a little bit yesterday about it, the lull. I mean, offensively, they went into a lull. Why did that happen? Defensively, things weren't as good in the middle part, the middle chunk of the game. To beat an SEC team, you're going to have to play with that same sense of urgency for four quarters. You wonder if the team did gain some confidence. It was, unfortunately, the biggest play of the game, Fouché tripping and falling into Colorado State's quarterback and putting him out. You know, I don't know, but that seemed to lift the team at that point where we got this now. Mm-hmm. Gave them the mental confidence to go finish the job.
Yeah, and those people who were talking about how, you know, it was the backup quarterback for Colorado State, yada, yada, yada. Okay, that's fine, but you got to remember that Colin Hill, who was the starter, he was 13 of 23 for 99 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was setting the world on fire.
O'Brien comes in and has over 100 yards.
Yeah, 7 of 10.
Yeah.
And a touchdown. So, Colin Hill was averaging 4.3 yards a pass or a completion. So it wasn't like he was burning you and just working you over. It was mainly Kinsey Jr. that was really having a field day against
us.
Yeah. And Marcus McElroy. Like, those guys doing really well against you.
When you let them go 75, it makes their numbers look pretty good pretty quick.
Correct. But even McElroy was 6 of 48, still averaging 8 yards a carry on that.
Based on what we've seen, why would you throw the ball very much on Arkansas? I mean, seriously.
It seems statistically,
you just run it and keep running it. Because Arkansas has not demonstrated yet the ability to consistently stop the run. So, I mean, I don't know why San Jose State would try to do anything, or A&M or any other team, until Arkansas proves otherwise, would have a game plan that wasn't 70% run.
At the same time, though, Ole Miss did not have very much success at running the ball against Arkansas. I'm looking at the wrong thing. No, you're right. Scotty Phillips had it. Hold on, Tommy. Scotty Phillips had 26 carries for 143 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Thank you.
But I was looking at the wrong stats there for the wrong game. But it's about running the ball. But isn't that weird, though? Because you would think the way that this defense is set up and the amount of experience that they have up front, that it would be the difference, and that the secondary and then the passing game would be the thing that struggles. Mm-hmm. But maybe also, and you could say, well, hold on, maybe they haven't gone up against really good passing teams. Colorado State was a really good passing team coming in, statistically at least. They were throwing for like 375 yards a game going into the Arkansas game.
What really worries me are these dual threat quarterbacks. Kellen Mond in a couple of weeks, a guy that can beat you both ways. And we have seen when speed gets around the corner and speed's not contained, Arkansas has trouble with that. So I worry about some of these quarterbacks, a Bo Nix. See, I know he's a young freshman down there, but some of these guys that, you know, that can truly run this RPO stuff, but hey, when the play breaks down, they can innovate. They can create yards. And, you know, when they get the open field, Arkansas struggles with those guys.
Yeah. And they have, it seems like, since the beginning of time.
Right.
But there's also been times where you've just gone up against really good players, really good quarterbacks, and it's been tough for any team to stop them. But it just seems like, for the past few years especially, that average quarterbacks have the games of their lives against Arkansas.
Right.
Quarterbacks that have never been known for, what was it, Trevor Knight in Texas A&M? He like almost rushed for like 200 yards. He wasn't even a dual threat quarterback. Mm-hmm. But he killed you with that. And so it was games like that that would frustrate you the most, is because you would be going up against, statistically, a quarterback that should not beat you, should not kill you with his feet, maybe be decent with his arm. And it seemed like you would game plan almost so much against his arm, you'd forget about containment going up against his legs. And so we haven't really had a chance to see what this team has shored up some of those problems, because Tommy, against Portland State and even against Ole Miss, containment broke down. And that's going to concern for this defense going to be late in these games when you go up against these quarterbacks that are dual threat guys.
Yep. All right. That is what Arkansas has got to figure out how to contain. And sometimes it's not more pressure, it's just containment, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes that's the problem with somebody. You put pressure on, you bring an outside blitz, and then you leave an open hole on the edge, and they're so fast, you can't respond, and you leave them open running lane.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I fear down the road, particularly in a couple of weeks against A&M.
Yeah, and if you've noticed from the defense too, Chavis has definitely been calling up some blitzes now. I mean, he is blitzing. But you know what? I'm fine with that. You know,
even showing a lot of it pre-snap. You know, bringing a corner up or outside linebacker, and hey, we're getting ready to come. They show a lot of different looks pre-snap.
That's right. Because pressuring the quarterback is so key. And Razorback fans have been clamoring for that for so long. Get after the quarterback. Send some blitzes. Be aggressive. Because, listen, you're playing conservative, and they're still beating you with their arm because you're not getting pressure. So make them make a decision. I would rather see a team go all in on the blitzes and give up a few big plays here and there than go all in on conservative and just let them nickel and dime you down the field.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how I always felt about defense. But it seems like John Chavis is really getting after it and trying to establish that aggressive mentality. So it may cost you in some games, may cost you here and there, but at the end of the day, I want a defense that's aggressive, and that's what they're showing right now, for sure.
Absolutely. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Give is to Alex Collins, straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas.
off of what Chad Morris had to say yesterday. A few of the interesting quotes that he had, of course, when he was talking about some of the injury updates, and it was good to see that Bumper Pool's not going to be out for an extended period of time. They expect him back, and they also expect Monteric Brown to be back. So some of the guys that they have been iffy on the defensive side should be good to go. But another player that I want to bring up, because there's a few clips and a few topics I want to get into in this segment. One of the things that he had talked about and something that we discussed with Clay yesterday was about Ty Cleary and how impressive he was at the center position for Arkansas this past Saturday.
Maturing. He's got a lot of snaps underneath his belt. I think he realized he's got to mature more. He's got to grow his knowledge of the game. And I think that's helped him. I think the way that he's trained as far as in the weight room and just the seriousness. And again, all that comes back to just being a mature, more mature player in his leadership. I mean, I saw it in the summer in the weight room with him getting on guys and encouraging guys. And then all of a sudden you started seeing guys listening to him. And I think that, the way you get guys to listen to you is you got to go perform on the field. And I think he's doing that. And so I think there's a lot of things that added up to where he is today and playing very well for us.
Ty Cleary at the center position is somebody that's been experienced. He's been around a while. We know under Brett Bielema, he tried to move him around on different offensive spot, offensive line positions, trying to figure out where he could be best served. And there was even times, not only last season especially, where the center could not get the ball to the quarterback effectively, but even parts earlier this season where they were struggling getting it to the quarterback, whether it was Hicks or Starkle, in a timely manner. And as simple as just a few milliseconds there would make the difference in the play call and how it would formulate and how it would bring out. But Ty Cleary was extremely impressive against Colorado State. And so much so that PFF College, which is the Power Football Index, they were putting out some of their SEC players and guys that are at particular positions that played the best in the SEC, and they even had Ty Cleary at the center position mentioned. Now, Nick Starkle being quarterback makes a huge difference in your offense. Being able to get the ball to your playmakers makes a huge difference. I get all that. But I think that another big difference you got to give credit where credit is due is the fact that Ty Cleary – not only was getting the ball to Nick Starkle in a timely manner, but also some of the plays that he had when he was blocking downfield. And even on that big run by Rakeem Boyd, if you rewatch that play, that was all made possible because of Ty Cleary and the great job he did on the block.
It didn't seem to float. The snap didn't seem to just kind of take forever to get there. And it's the difference in less than a second in one of these floating snaps versus one of these, where it pops back to the quarterback. Just boom. We're talking about a quarter of a second, half second tops. But you're right, it makes all the difference in the world in the timing of everything. I didn't notice it this week being, just deliberate getting back to the quarterback like you were trying to guide it or aim it back there. It just, boom, there it is. So maybe that's just, again, the rising tide of Nick Starkle lifting all the boats and Ty Cleary being one of those.
Yeah. Because as we mentioned, you've had as Arkansas, even in under Brett Bielema, when you didn't have all the successes that came to it, there were a few positions that you could always count on being really good, no matter what. Tight end was one of those positions and has always been one of those positions. You have been very blessed and fortunate to have some great tight ends. You've also been very blessed and fortunate to have a few great defensive linemen, defensive ends even. You've also been blessed with the quarterbacks that you've had come through this campus over the past 10 years. But the center position has also been one that you always had quality play at.
Yep.
I mean, you've had Remington winners there.
Yep.
You've had guys that even if they weren't Remington winners, they were fine players. Even when Ragnow had to move over to the center position, he was really good. I mean, you had Mitch Smothers who wasn't even getting all the accolades, but he was solid and you can count on him. You've always had guys that you can count on at center. And it's amazing how different everything looks when you struggle at that position.
Yeah. I mean, you go back to Jonathan Lewigs and Travis Swanson, two guys that played at the next level. And then, there's been since then some ups and downs, but there's been a kind of like you've had a quarterback until recently, you've had a succession plan. And then I guess Ragnow's been your third best center in the last decade. And I know he went number one overall, but I don't know. I don't know how to judge these guys. I mean, he went first round, not number one, but first round from center. So I don't know. Those are three really good centers they've had, and you're right. You look at the teams; they generally have been better teams when you had better centers.
Yeah, because look at
it's got to be a correlation there.
Well, and look at the offenses that they were having being a part of. And I'm not saying that's just because of them. You obviously got to have 10 other guys, but You know, Jonathan Luigs was the center when you had the Darren McFadden, Felix Jones, Peyton Hillis days. That was so good. Travis Swanson was the center when you had the Brian Mallett and the Tyler Wilson days. Even Ragnow, the times that he would come in and play center, or even a Travis Swanson late, you know, it was during, and maybe not Travis Swanson, but more about Ragnow and even a Mitch Smothers. Those were times that when Brett Bielema's offense was at its best as well. So, I mean, if you just look at it, there may be a direct correlation. Maybe I'm making too much out of it, but there's no doubt that having a quality guy snapping you the ball, who not only can get it in a timely manner, but it can also get off the block quickly, can start and make an offense completely and totally different.
How many plays end up being positive when you have a bad snap to start it? Even when it's off just a little bit, and the quarterback has to take his eyes off where he needs them to be to find and locate the snap.
Changes everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it because it makes
the throws the timing off.
That's right. And it's all about the timing.
So, and every play starts with the center, you know.
Yeah. And with an offense that you want to have up-tempo and move fast and be quick, you can't have slow snaps.
Yeah.
You know, you got to have a quarterback that can throw the ball quick. You got to have players that can move quick. But you can't have a center that can't snap the ball quick. Simple as that.
Looks like something they've worked on and they've improved.
Yes, and it's made a huge difference. You can absolutely tell. Let's go to the Cherokee Casino Hotline, 877-377-6963. Matt is in Mansfield. What's going on, Matt?
Hey, good Tuesday morning to you guys. How are you guys this morning?
We're
good.
Awesome, man. Good, how about you?
Oh, great. Hey, you guys was talking about key positions, and I played center in school, and that's a very key position. And one of the guys I always looked up to, you mentioned his name. The best center to ever play for Arkansas was Jonathan Luigs. And I'm going to tell you, if you watched when he played, that whole offensive line back then, I can remember wanting to be just like him. When Darren McFadden would get the ball, he would turn the nose tackle to whichever way he knew McFadden was going to hit the hole, or Hillis, or Felix Jones. Then you come back up and you guys mentioned names like Frank Ragnow, and you mentioned names, you know, when Ragnow was there and that offensive line was going, you know, they also had better offensive linemen. He took control of that line. You know, you had Sebastian Trentola, and you had other offensive linemen that were just as good, but it was always the center that took care of our offensive line. And I agree with you guys 100% that if you have a good center, you're going to have a good offensive line, because he is your field general of that offensive line, and it's his responsibility to make sure that they're up to par to protect their quarterback. So thanks for the call in this morning, guys. I look forward to seeing you guys the rest of this week, maybe call in about the game Saturday night, but y'all have a good week, and thanks.
Hey, appreciate the phone call, Matt, and appreciate the comments. And that's the thing is we agree with you, and I think most people agree with you that if you just look at the center as being kind of the general of the offensive line, it can make a difference when you got not only a quality guy that's got the ability to snap the ball and get off the blocks, but also a guy that can be a vocal leader. And it just can make all the difference in the world on your offense. Again, I'm not saying that Ty Clary alone is the reason why everything has changed offensively for Arkansas. It requires having a quality quarterback like Nick Starkle. It requires having freshman phenom wide receivers like you have with Knox and Burks. It requires Cheyenne O'Grady making big plays. And it requires the other offensive linemen to get off their blocks and to open up holes. It requires all of that. But the point is that something as simple, at least what we view as simple, as being upgraded and a lot better than what it was, makes all the difference in the world. And it's something that you never have to worry about if you're an offense, especially an offense like Arkansas. You should never have to worry about whether the snap is going to get to the quarterback in a timely manner.
Again, every play has to start with every positive play is going to start with a smooth snap. Just 99% of the time.
Yeah.
Because it just, you know, messes up. If it's a run play, the mesh point's messed up. If it's a passing play, now the timing's messed up, and the quarterback or the receivers have to adjust. It just fouls up the whole operation.
But here's my question too, Tommy. Because I think it was after Portland State, and even after Ole Miss, I think we discussed how it seemed like the ball wasn't getting to the quarterback in a timely manner.
It was floating back there.
What changed? What changed from Ole Miss in 1 week to Colorado State?
Quarterback.
Oh, how does the quarterback?
But how does make the difference in the snap? I think I think it's just another week of Ty Clary working on that. That to me is the only reasonable explanation. Is this is something he knows is an issue? I'm not going to say he heard the criticisms. I think it's just obvious when you watch the film. This isn't where we need it to be. So you go work on it. You know, It's just not where this team needs to be, so they fixed it. And you fix it. Sometimes it's just time. Again, we live in a world where we don't want to spend the time to get it fixed. Just, I don't want to hear about the labor. Show me the baby.
That's right.
Well, you know, hopefully they've fixed this baby.
Yeah.
And they got that snap down.
Listen to the Morning Rush on this Toyota Tuesday. Be sure to check out all new 2019 Toyota vehicles at your local Arkansas Toyota dealer, including the Highlander with plenty of room up to 8 people, the stylish new Corolla, the work-ready family Tough Tundra, and the go-anywhere 4Runner. Toyota, let's go places. And you know, that's also the thing, is that when the Ole Miss game happened and people were upset and they were fired up, and rightfully so, the things that we discussed and even had and Clay on, and he was discussing with us as well, that the main issues, the glaring issues that they had, were fixable. They were fixable things. It wasn't like you had to wait until the next year to try to recruit some talent to get in, and that's at the point in time when everything would change. It wasn't ever about that. It was about just shoring up the small things, like the snap, like getting people lined up, like knowing who to throw the ball to and when on reverse pass plays. Small stuff like that is what makes the difference.
Well, I would argue the snap is not a small thing, but
correct. But my point is that in the grand scheme of things in football, though, that's how people view it.
It should be an afterthought.
That's right.
No one thinks about the snap or the holder or the long snapper till it goes bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of those things you expect to be a smooth operation.
Yeah, because it's the basics.
And it tells you where you've been at offensively and really where this team and this program's at when basic stuff like a snap has to be discussed.
Yeah.
Because and celebrate it when it's fixed.
Well, because, Tommy, it's one of the few things, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it's one of the few things that does not change from junior high to high school to college. You know, the same distance usually between center and quarterback, the same movement, the same everything. I mean, nothing usually changes. So that's why it's always considered an afterthought. You know, it's kind of like, you know, knowing the 3 points of pressure on running with the football.
Eagle claw.
Yeah, that's right.
Eagle claw.
Like, it's basics. You learn that in the very beginning, so that should never be something you have to learn in college. And that's the problem.
Hand tight.
Yeah, I think it was Nutt that called it the 5 points of pressure that he would always tell it. So, you know, Mike in Albuquerque texted into the Cherokee Casino hotline saying, is it possible that the quarterback had a different preference for how he wanted to receive the snap?
Perhaps.
I mean, I don't know.
That would be a Chad Morris, Ty Cleary, Joe Craddock question, I guess.
Yeah. I mean,
I've never seen a quarterback that, hey, a little softer with the snap.
yeah, really fire it back there.
But here's
time.
The thing. Here's where I'd argue. The series where we saw a couple of series with Portland State, the second half at Ole Miss, I don't think there was a noticeable difference in the snaps in those games.
No.
When Starkel was in.
No, not at all.
You go back and really examine it, but golly, we're in the minutia here. We're talking about the snap, the velocity of the snap. But it's noticeably different. And here's the thing: it was so slow. It was noticeable to the untrained eye. That's how unconventional it was for a little while.
Yeah, and it made the difference in a lot of these plays. And that's really why it's such a big deal, is because you saw the impact that it was having on this offense when it wasn't getting to the quarterback in a timely manner, wasn't getting them and hitting them right in the hands. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw the difference that it makes, and that's why it's a big deal, and that's why we were really getting into it. But, you know, shifting gears a little bit, and I wanted to bring this up, and I'm sure you've been asked about it too, Tommy. The play calling against Colorado State, it wasn't brought up like it was against Ole Miss.
Nope.
But do you think that something was changed? Do you think it was more Chad Morris calling plays? Was it Joe Craddock still? Well, I was curious about that because, listen, I know that you got a different quarterback and they game plan differently with Starkel, but to me, there was a pretty big difference in the type of plays and formations that they lined up in against Colorado State than they were against Ole Miss.
And what was the big difference? It was the downfield vertical passing game that was really indoctrinated into this game plan. I don't know how many. It was probably 8 or 10 shots that would be more than 20 yards downfield. They didn't complete them all, obviously, but that was the difference in this game. They were willing to take shots down the field. I've got to believe that that's a Starkel thing, that, you know, those plays have been in there, but they had, you know, they needed Starkel to get the ball down there with velocity, get the ball out of his hands, and that occurred. They had more confidence in his ability to accurately put it on the receiver 30 yards downfield. That, to me, was, you talk about play calling difference, wasn't the play, I mean, it was the plays they actually called, not the order in which they were called in necessarily. So I think we all feel better about it because, listen, it's just more exciting when they throw the home run ball. It's just more fun to watch. But I think ultimately, what does it really matter? I think it helps you get chunk plays and move it down the field. You're not going to have a high percentage of completing all those passes. But you know what it does? It opens up the run game a little more. Because now A&M and Kentucky and Auburn and these teams, and the San Jose State this week too, all have to respect the ability of Nick Starkel to get it down the field. And they got to figure out how to match up with Burks and Knox and these wide receivers that create mismatch problems. That's what I like about it.
Yes, and that's where you feel confident if you are Chad Morris and Joe Craddock and even the fans, that you have not only the ability to throw a deep ball, but an accurate deep ball. That's important too. Listen, Cole Kelly could throw a deep ball, but we're talking about an accurate deep ball, putting it in position to where only the receiver can go get it with those back shoulder passes that he's throwing, putting in those positions, but also having wide receivers that are athletic enough, that are big enough to go get it. Mm-hmm. That's what you've been missing so much, and that's where the excitement level for Arkansas fans comes into this offense.
Yeah. Play calling only comes up when they don't work. No one talks about play calling when the offense is scoring 55 points.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I know there's a defensive score, but when the team is scoring 55, no one brings up play calling.
Yeah, it never happens. Let's get into your Hog update here on the Morning Rush.
Arkansas football. It's the players running through the A. Hog hats. It's more than 70,000 fans calling Woo Pig Suey.
It's a great day to be a Razorback.
Guys, I've got just one thing I want to say to you. Touchdown, Arkansas!
Arkansas wins the Big 12 championship! The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season!
This is your Hog Update on the Morning Rush.
All right, it is time for your Hog Update, presented by Ozark Sportsman Supply.
Hey, we know you love guns, and we know you like free ammo. Attention, Arkansas firearm lovers. They have an event for you at the Ozarks coming up this weekend. Join Ozark Sportsman Supply September 20th and 21st for Springfield Armory Hit the Range event. The first 50 shooters receive a T-shirt, 10 rounds of ammo, a Hit the Range target, and a sticker or koozie. It's your choice. It's all during this special event. You can take home any other items and the in-stock models for $40 off from Springfield as well. We'll see you at the Ozarks September 20th and 21st. That's Ozark Sportsman Supply, Highway 412 West, barely out of Springdale and Taneytown.
So for your Hog update, the Razorbacks will play against Texas A&M at 11 a.m. down in Jerry World in Arlington, which means us on the pregame and postgame, how that will be set up is that we will be on the air at 6 a.m. on Saturday, which is pretty much like a Morning Rush on the weekend version. Mm-hmm. We'll go from 6 to 8, and then we'll, of course, have your postgame comments and the postgame show after the IMG postgame concludes as well. So usually that's around, what, 3:30, 4 o'clock when that gets going?
Usually be on about 3 to 5.
Yeah. So, just wanted to give everybody an update on that. Hey, I'm fine with this game being at 11 a.m. Know that we always complain about, and everyone seems to complain about 11 a.m. games. I'm okay with this being at 11 a.m. personally.
Listen, one or two, it's the thing. You want a mixture of game times. You get 6:30, then you're going to get 11. Then what, the bye week after that, mm-hmm. and we'll find out later on about Kentucky.
But I'm so far, Arkansas has been pretty lucky. They had a 3 and a 6:30, a 3 mm-hmm. and then a 6:30, and now an 11 a.m. I'll take the mixture. It's the one you had like 8, 11 a.m. games. It felt like that it just got really, really old. So there's your update. And also, Connor Limpert named SEC Special Teams Player of the Week after hitting his 56-yard field goal and also consistently getting into the end zone for touchbacks as well.
Looking at the forecast, rain on Friday, rain on Saturday, rain on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all on my phone app here for Fayetteville. So Saturday right now still looking like rain and 79 for the high.
Oh, hey, the temperature's nice. I don't know about the rain, but I'll take that over the extreme heat that they had this past weekend and on Saturday.
Yeah. Tomorrow is the last day forecasted in the 90s at 90 degrees in Fayetteville.
Oh, well, there you have it. Let's go to the Cherokee Casino Hotline, get a quick call in here. Don is in Greenwood. Don, you got about a minute. What's going on, man?
Good morning, guys. I think what you've seen there was a leader step on the field, and I think the team played up for him. And 84, the tight end, that's a game maker at the end of the game. And I don't think he would have played that way for the other quarterback. I think Starkel was the whole key right there. I think you've seen a team that is playing – worse than they are. I think they're better than they played, if that makes sense, if I can express that well. I think they're better than what we've seen, and I think Starkel takes them. Now, we're going to have to figure out where we can steal two wins to get a bowl. If we get a bowl, that's like a Super Bowl for us. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can get Kentucky. I don't know, but you wonder why Starkel wasn't in there from the whole get-go. We all kind of knew he was a better quarterback. But you could see a whole different team because of that guy right there. You have a leader on the field. A leader makes a big deal. A boss makes a big deal. And I think the team played up for him. That's all I got, guys.
Well, appreciate
it. 84 needs a nod.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Let's go to the Cherokee Casino Hotline and welcome in the man, Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Good morning, Tom. It's a little different today that we get to catch up with you and talking and recapping a solid Razorback victory.
Yeah, isn't that great, man? I hope you're not too sore, but it is a beautiful day to be alive.
Yeah, it certainly is.
One of the things that jumped out right from the start, I mean, we knew Starkel was starting the game, and that was one of the big things, but the style of offense, the play calling. Tom, the deep shots downfield to me offensively were a welcome breath of fresh air, but also kind of loosened things up for the run game as well.
Oh, no question about it. And that's kind of what the fans have been wanting to see. If you've got a kid that's got this talent, and, you know, everyone I think understood that perhaps his grasp on the playbook or the amount of the playbook material he had access to and great knowledge of might have been more limited, but it's funner to see that. And he did some beautiful back shoulder stuff, I think, with both O'Grady and Knox. And it's just there was a little seams, man. He was hitting it in there. I mean, the one drive when they when it was a tie game and their first possession of the fourth quarter on three successive plays, you know, Knox for a big gain, Burks over the middle, big gain, and Knox again. That was a wonder to behold. And just the attitude of Nick Starkel. Remember when the fourth down call, there was a little bit of a pause there. And in the press box, I think people were wondering, were they going to get a check on the spot, a review? And so Chad Morris called timeout. When the offense went to the sideline, there were some boos in the fans. Nick Starkel put his hands in the air and was doing this whole, like, hey, people, calm down. Be patient here. And I kind of like that, you know. So new attitude and a breath of fresh air and a bunch of points on the board.
Well, and Tom, one of the more important things of this game, of course, is how they finished the game in the fourth quarter. Because last year when they went up against Colorado State, they were outscored 17-0 in the fourth quarter. This year had an opposite effect, 21-0. The Hogs outscored the Rams. They had, of course, the scoop and score play. The defense stepped up, even though I'm sure that they were really tired and fatigued. What was the difference in that, and how was this team able to finally finish off a team when it looked like they were making a comeback when it was all tied at 34, but they were the ones that ended up getting the victory?
Yeah, you know, confidence, I think, attitude, even though the confidence wasn't based on doing it in the past. But guys like Scooter Harris called the team up and said, this isn't going to happen. And, you know, honestly, on the inside, you felt like without Colin Hill, the other guy, he wasn't going to really hurt you running the ball. And the play they scored on to tie the game was a fluke play. I mean, they should have got him down in the backfield. He broke contain and he hit a guy, and Miles Mason didn't stay on his feet. And they tied the game that way. But you didn't feel like they were going to be able to sustain with him in there. But they shut off the run really well. Scooter Harris made a great stop on one of the Dante Wright end-around plays for like a gain of one. And then they got him on the move, Pat O'Brien, and he threw some balls inaccurately. So, like I said, that one drive was beautiful. And then, of course, C.J. O'Grady just made an individual play. When Joe Craddock admitted yesterday, he's saying, get down, get down, get down. And then it winds up being a 62-yard touchdown. And then they got the scoop and score. So, you know, they dominated in the fourth quarter, which was a big turnaround from last year.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the defensive score. That's two games in a row. Now, John Chavis isn't happy with the points or the yards given up in this game. And I think we've reached a new point in college football where maybe the standard's different. But how much does the defensive takeaways that we've seen consistently through three games, and I know it's not all SEC games, but how much does that counterbalance some of the yards and points given up when your defense has at least scored in back-to-back games?
It really does. I mean, if you can come up with some big stops that are on the fringe of field goal range or you get takeaways, it's not like they're going to give up some field goals. They did in that game, but it's huge. And not only that, but you know, like the Ole Miss play, you know, they're moving down. They're on the move. And then you turn it into six for you. So they've stressed it, and they're you got guys raking at the ball, and it's successful in some cases. And in some of these big games, it could be the difference in a game. And another point, I'm glad to see their special teams have gotten better. I don't think they're to the point where they can dominate people, but they'd certainly made Colorado State do the sky kicking because of Devion Warren's really good kickoff return. Connor Limpert, special teams player of the week. And then Sam Loy, he punted okay, and he wasn't super great, but he punted okay, and they're making strides in special teams.
All right, let's quickly go through the injuries, because Bumper Pool is one that people have been keeping an eye on, a shoulder sprain there. Chad gave us some other information on injuries yesterday.
He did, and you know, right at the very end, because Hayden Henry came off the field after that huge hit. So he's got something going on with his shoulder. Don't know the extent of it. We'll find out a little bit more today, but there's your linebacker core. I mean, it had been the defensive ends. Now the linebacker core is kind of under, you know, injury issues right now. And so we might see more of Devon McClure, who's played well. I mean, he's made some great tackles on the edge early on. We might see more Deion Edwards, but you got to get those guys in good shape for when they resume SEC play in 2 weeks. You got to think that, you know, that they're favored over San Jose State, and whoever they put out there, you know, they'd stand a good chance of winning that game. And then Zach Williams at D end, he goes down, but now they're getting with a knee, and now they're getting Zach Williams. Now they're getting Jamario Bell back. So there've been a lot of flux at defensive end. We might end up seeing some Eric Gregory here pretty soon too. But yeah, you want to get that situation stabilized a little better before you go into SEC play again.
Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Always appreciate you hopping on with us, Tom. Man, enjoy it, and we'll catch up with you on Thursday. All right.
Outstanding.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.